Introductions, and we'll start with the head of the table and go around and go through the audience and just state your name and who you represent. Mike, you want to start us off?
Mike Sexton, Oklahoma Department of Commerce.
Kathy Hines, Center for Spatial Analysis.
Cheryl Taylor, Oklahoma Association of Regional Councils.
Craig Moody, Oklahoma Department of Transportation.
Mike Shagrew, Water Resources Board.
Troy Frazier, Oklahoma Tax Commission.
Mike Sharp, Conservation Commission.
Wayne Patterson, Garfield County Assessor.
Jane Weber, Oklahoma Geological Survey.
David Wheelock, Oklahoma Department of Agriculture and Forestry.
Steve Stadler, State Geographer.
Dara Logan, City Government.
Amy Britt, Department of Environmental Quality.
Steve Clapp, American Red Cross.
Mayor Rollins, Water Resources Board.
James Deaton, State Regents for Higher Education.
Shelley Willoughby, Office of Geographic Information.
Brett Williston, Rogers County.
Susan Langley, Oklahoma Forestry Service.
Charles Brady, City of Ardmore.
Michael Larson, OSU.
April Chipman, OSU.
Steve Willoughby, Association of Central Oklahoma Governments.
Brad Goose, Association of Central Oklahoma Governments.
Michael Reed, Department of Environmental Quality.
Karen Smith, Justice of the Court.
Brad Spurgeon, Commissioner of the Land Office.
John Duniver, Ag Division.
Dan Hay, Commissioner of Land Office.
Sergeant David Davis, Oklahoma Military Department.
Mark Brown, Oklahoma Department of Transportation.
Don Schaefer, Oklahoma Tourism.
Laura Dedrick, Student.
Chris Hill with Meacham Associates.
Kathy Collier.
Ryan Self, Water Board.
Okay, well, thank you. Appreciate everybody being here today. We do have a sign-in sheet over here. If you haven't had an opportunity to do that, please sign in so we can keep you up to date on council activities. Okay, first item, minutes for the April meeting have been circulated to the council members. Does anyone have any corrections?
Move to be approved.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. We approve the minutes. Is there any discussion on that? Hearing none, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Thank you. Minutes have been approved. Committee reports. Let's see, we've got a few. Dan, you got anything on land cover?
Yeah, I can report a little bit more. We're still don't have a good chunk of money yet from the LCCs. So we did hire Katie Ewing to do the Oklahoma field work. We're getting her equipment, the laptop and the light. She'll be going out in the field shortly. She'll be meeting with her Texas counterpart later this month.
Any of you all had a chance to?
No, but I still want to. So hopefully we'll get something together soon.
Hey, James on the. Charles on the address.
Addressing. Going through, identified most of the fields, working on the domains. I'm probably fixing to toss it back out to the group again with everybody's comments and see if we can get those domains nailed down. And once we get the schema of the data structure built, then we'll start working the language of document that goes along with it. Hopefully,
I don't know if you all saw any articles on the fire that was out in Colorado a couple of months ago. You know, out Denver, a wildfire that got out. Some people lost their lives in that, and also a lot of property damage. One of the things that contributed to the response effort to that was poor addresses and old maps. Some of the maps were 18 years old, the responders were using. A lot of the addresses were wrong, and that contributed to people that called in to 911 but couldn't get located, and they were told that they were out of danger, but in fact they weren't. Actually, some of the people that called in perished. So addresses are very important when it comes down to the nitty-gritty, so I'm glad we're working towards getting a standard in place to take care of it. Okay, well, today our highlight presentation is Steve Clapp with the Red Cross. We're lucky that we don't have any tornadoes going on today, and so Steve can be with us because that keeps him busy. That's one of his main things. So he's going to show us today what he does, and we appreciate you being here, Steve. Thank you. We will move out of the way.
Thank
All right, well, originally today I was going to talk specifically about tracking radar indicated tornadoes with this, the warning decision support system integrated information, which we call WOODS 2, produced by the National Severe Storms Laboratory here in Oklahoma, here in Norman, Oklahoma. But since this group is more of a use of GIS, and I thought I would go ahead and change this to using GIS and geospatial analysis for tornado disaster responses and disaster recovery operations, which is how Red Cross is now starting to lead this, use this technology, and we're actually at the forefront for the rest of the nation. In the old days, after an event occurred, we started collecting preliminary damage information and impact assessment information to determine the best boundaries, the size and scope of the event, which is the very first thing you have to do in order to work a disaster. Since tornadoes typically occur late afternoon, early evening, the collection of this visual information is usually limited or delayed until daylight the following day. So we would lose about, say a storm hit at 6 o'clock, we would lose 12 hours or 14 hours before we could actually get people out in the field. And once they're out there, they would, at night, they would actually be collecting information about where the damage was, and we would be limited to that type of collection, and then we'd have to later require or verify that information. So we would send out people to verify and collect that information the following day. So in the meantime, we've now used up 14 hours, if not more. We would interview people that came into the chapter and ask them what they would see on the way in, and then we produced damage reports based on the best estimate of numbers of homes that were damaged and the degree of damage, whether to be destroyed, major, minor, or affected. And then the PDA process normally takes 1 to 4 days, depending on the size of the event. Based on our PDA numbers, we then make staffing decisions and make requests. So I, as a disaster assessment manager, would define out how many teams we would need to go out and do the preliminary or the detailed damage assessment. We would take these numbers and make staffing decisions based on that. Once the staffing was determined, we would then collect our detailed damage assessment information, which is we would get an exact count of information on the homes that were actually destroyed, who the addresses were, and the level of damage, so that when people from the in our community would come to Red Cross for assistance, they would come with identification saying that I live at this address, and we'd look it up in this list of all these things. We'd find what degree of damage, we'd give them assistance accordingly. So we'd send out people to complete these street sheets, and it would list each home as by degree and their address. And we produce a detailed damage assessment report that would then be used to determine more information about the types of service delivery we'd make. So we would then have an exact numbers, and we'd decide whether or not FEMA might be coming in to provide assistance, and we'd back off so we don't provide duplicate assistance to them. The detailed damage assessment process took about 1 to 3 days to complete that part. Then we took the information off the street sheets and we'd enter them into the computer, so when people come, we could look up on the computer to see if they're there. Then we transmit the reports to National by, wrong group. The old technology was basically beating on logs with bones. I mean, that's the type of way we transmit this information. And the whole process would take 3 to 10 days before we would actually get this information done. Today, in central and western Oklahoma, we can complete the same process by producing more information in 12 to 72 hours with GIS and geospatial analysis using NSSL's warning decision support supplement services, integrated information, and other tools. On May 1st, which was the first time we used this technology back in 2010, we had the tornadoes in Norman, eastern Oklahoma. We completed the whole DA process in 48 hours, and that's with about 980 homes that were damaged. The second time we worked it was May 24th, 2011. We had a tornado outbreak, and we completed the process in 48 hours with 1,480 homes that were damaged. The third time we used this was April 13th and 14th, with two tornado outbreaks. We completed the DA process in Norman and day one within 12 hours, and in Woodward, we completed the second day within 12 hours. So we had 680 homes between the two that we completed the whole process in 12 hours. This is how we did it. This is an example of what, now if I could go through in detail and show you how to use this product, but I only got 30 minutes, so I have to do as quickly as I can so that I don't bore you all. This is what WOODS 2 looks like when you first load it. You'll notice that we have up here is a warning or a tornado watch box. And those are the other types of city thunderstorm watch box. And here we have a tornado warning right here, and we're going to zoom in on that. And this is what the product looks like. It actually is showing a coupling. These white dots that you see here are couplings that the software actually analyzes and produces these types of display. So we take this information, as you see these white dots are moving along. And then move along, and as you see there's a progress bar up here, which shows the actual, as the computer moves along in a minute time interval. And it's adding these little white blotches, and we keep moving along and continue to add these white blotches. Now notice we've added these little pins and these white blotches as this moves right along. So what we're doing is we're collecting information about the path of the tornado in real time, and we're putting it into a map that we can then use. And as you see, that's how. And this is another display of the information. It's called rotation track, which is basically, if you can imagine, a coupling or an area of rotation that the computer has identified, and then as it moves, it takes another one, and it takes another one, it creates a string of actual rotation track. And this is what they call a 120-minute rotation track, and this is a 30-minute rotation track, and you can see that those yellow pins are sitting right in the middle of those rotation tracks. So there's another type of display from the wind shear item, which was the white dots in the purple area, and that's what it looks like in going back and forth between the two. And that's another display of the same thing. The storm continues as it moves along, and that's actually ended up being a long track tornado, and that's what that looks like right there. And that's a different altitude of the same type of rotation track. This is what the product of which two also adds is spotter reports, which are these little red things here that you actually see. When a spotter has actually identified an area where a tornado has touched down, they then report to the National Weather Service, and that gets updated to this product as well, to which two as well. Another example, here we're tracking a tornado. I forgot where this was, but I was tracking, notice the pins down there, and the white blotch as it moves along, and I'm adding these pins, and that gives me my tornado path. So now that helps us, because I'll show you here in a little bit more detail. There's another example. This is the Joplin tornado. This is done in real time. Here are our pins of where I was actually had the track. I was just got home from having open heart surgery, and I was I had to do something with the storms going on. And when I found out that Joplin was just hit, I went to my computer and actually was able to pull this information up. And I was able to, with this track, send this information to the our chapter in Missouri, and they were able to utilize this information. This here is the actual path of the damage path, going right across there. And that's the path that I actually tracked on my computer in real time. Now, you have to realize that there are some errors with Woods 2. And this one error is this little storm made a little S, as you see, a little turn move there. But for the most part, this is a fairly accurate product. And I'll show you in some other ways the accuracy of it. This is what the track actually looked like, the path actually looked like. And this was my path. And this is here, from here to here is like about half a mile. Birmingham, Alabama, I was in the hospital when I was tracking this, suffering complications from my open heart surgery, and I was tracking, and I was using the actual hospital's web connection, and the nurses come running down. I was getting real frustrated because I didn't have any bandwidth, and nurses come down and ask me what was wrong, and I said, well, I'm trying to track the storms, and I don't have any bandwidth, and you can tell people to get off computer so I can do this. That's on the information of the Red Cross. And they insisted that I went and they took the computer away from me, basically. But this is what the actual tracks is, rotation track, and this is when I'm going into Birmingham, Alabama. And you see this area of blue here is of very high rotation, and this is where the storm is actually real large, right there. And there's Birmingham right over here. Woodward, Oklahoma, which is where we actually did this process in 12 hours, we set a record. National Red Cross was, they were surprised because when we The storm hit at midnight, and at midnight I had this track, and I was then able to take in and put an area which was the actual area of that I thought that the storm would be in, the storm track would be in. And then I was able to, as soon as I got a report from the news, they said there was damage at this intersection right here. There was damage at a mobile home park. I was unable to zoom in with Google Earth and find the mobile home park, which is right here. So then I was able to make a determination that that actual storm track was to the east of my original line, which is right here. And so then I was able to cut my area of damage swath into this, into a smaller size. And then when I found that, again, that mobile home park, I was actually able to draw a line showing the actual area of where the actual damage path was. So this is all within 30 minutes of the storm. Now, if you remember, when we first started, we would send teams out the next day in the daylight hours to find out where the damage was. And we're able to do this that night, within just a few minutes of the storm. We then were able to deploy our staffing. This here is actual, what the actual damage of the storm actually looked like here. And that's our, there was a home park was over here, half of it was damaged or destroyed. There are errors with woods too. I can explain to you what some of these things are, but they'll probably bore you all to death, so I'll spare you that. But part of the errors of the product is the curvature of the earth. Your radar beam shoots up straight. Your storms are down below, close to the ground. So as the beam gets further away from the radar, it actually shoots over the top of where the actual storms are. So if you look at what a storm was that's moving along the earth, it's tilted. So the actual where the storm comes out the bottom is always necessarily different from where the actual radar beam is. So that's the difference of where the radar beam is versus the track that I would identify. But once that track is identified, the whole track will shift based on the whole path of the storm. The track will actually shift and stay parallel to the actual track itself. Distance from the radar is a problem. Availability and beam strength as you're shooting through one storm into another causes problems. The tilt of the storm, which I explained to you just a second ago. The speed of the storm has a big issue in interference as well. This is an example of our May 24th tornado that came through here last year. We went through Norman down here, and you'll notice that I put my house down here. So as I'm tracking, I know whether or not I need to actually take cover, to what extent, or if I need to go outside and look, which is what I actually do. And then this is the one that went through down by Newcastle. And then here we have the storm that is the one up by the lake in and this is the storm that went up the north side of the city. And I had this information within 30 minutes of the storm as well. This is an actual overlay of the damage that we're able to, as we input information into our computers, we can actually upload this information into Google Earth and get ourselves a COP on the actual damage path and pass this information along. And this was done here in this was probably one day worth of work. This is a close-up of actual details that you can see. The mobile home park that was actually damaged. And this is how that slide was supposed to delete. But anyways, that's what it looked like when it's geocoded. And we have information. Any questions on this so far? And I'll show you a couple of them. Going through this kind of quick.
Where do you get your initial report established to a Carolina? Where are you getting that to?
We listen to the news or we'll get spotter reports. Normally we get news reports. I was actually as soon as the event occurred. I'm doing this on a computer at the same time. I'm listening to, I think it was Weather Channel had or CNN had somebody. Well, the Weather Channel, they actually had somebody that was in there within minutes, and they said, "Oh, the damage we found is one side of this grid." We also sometimes we don't necessarily get good reports. It depends. But we get spotter reports, so we know when the storm is. But we know how to send people out to actually look at the area of damage. Does that make sense?
So you're getting the same information I can get?
Yes, so, yes. This here, I'm zooming in. Now we did. We're able to do PDA that night, preliminary damage assessment reports, based on once I was able to determine this actual track of this tornado here, we were able to zoom in close, and we could say, well, we've got a couple of homes here that might get hit. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 homes there, and there might be some homes here, and we're actually I was able to count that there would be, in Woodward, roughly 150 homes damaged from the storm. There's actually 162 homes that were damaged in the storm. And so we were pretty accurate. But I was able to make a determination that night that 160 or 150 homes, I could send out two detailed damage assessment teams, and they could have that done within a couple hours. So at 8 o'clock in the morning, since Woodward does not have a large volunteer staff to pull from, was able to have two teams from Oklahoma City, and they drove into Woodward. They left at like 8 o'clock, and they got there at 10:30, and they had the whole area actually surveyed by 12:30. So we then had, when National called, we got our call with at 2 o'clock. National said, okay, what's your preliminary numbers? I said, well, we have detail numbers for you. And they said, no, you can't have detail numbers. Well, yeah, we've got detailed numbers. And they were actually shocked. We actually set a record. And this was the 600 some odd homes. We also had homes that were down in Altus. We had 300 some odd homes that were affected down in Altus. And we had homes also down in Fort Norman. We had some homes that were affected. So we're actually able to, using this GIS technology, get our job done in just a fraction of the time what the rest of the nation is. The Kansas tornadoes that hit the same time as our Woodward tornado, the Red Cross sent a team into Kansas, and they were still doing preliminary damage assessment with the same number of homes, 650 homes, 5 days into the event. And we were done within 12 hours. We are training this technology to use to the other chapters throughout the United States because it's such a valuable tool. Anybody have any questions? Yes.
Did you extract addresses and names when they were tied to the logs?
No, we don't. The addresses that we get when we send out teams to actually do the damage survey, they write the addresses down on a street sheet, and that's where they have the actual address, and then they have the degree of damage. We have to have that specific address linked to that. To that specific degree of damage, so that when people come to our center, our service center, they say, I live at this house with this address, we look it up, we find the degree of damage, and they get assistance accordingly. So we need that. Even if we can pull information, it wouldn't really do us much good. We do use random sampling to find out in an area that's been affected, to find out whether or not what the ratio of renters to the homeowners that occupy the homes, which help us determine some statistics information on the type of assistance we'll be providing. We do that by looking at going to the county tax assessor's website, and we normally find out if the mailing address is the same as the actual physical property address. If the mailing address is different, we know if the renter occupied. And we know that there's a higher chance that they'll actually require assistance. So you can have 1,000 homes that are destroyed, but if it's in a new area where most you're going to have 90% sure that our response that we're going to have to that area is going to be more of assistance to help them versus feeding and stuff like that versus knowing that we're going to be providing financial assistance, which would be renting, finding a place to stay, food, clothing, because all their insurance would cover all that. Red Cross is not having plans to be able to get there. Next question.
Are you working at all with FEMA to make sure? Because I'm actually from Garfield County, and we went out and helped the assessor in Woodland County assess that damage. But we've noticed what we've started doing is we've started using FEMA's damage assessments. That way, when the assessor makes it, it's, we know that FEMA's going to use what we're using, or we're actually using what they're using. So I can see where if you and FEMA can coordinate with the assessor, all those questions about addressing and everything else is right there.
Yeah, but we're still have to tie that address to the level again. So, but we actually do, Red Cross now part of our program that I've been developing to expand our volunteer base is a letter of understanding with various city managers or emergency managers, county emergency managers, to do assistance, to work cooperatively. One of the things that, that we have with Norman, Oklahoma City, various other, this is a slow process getting people to go in this process, but divide and conquer, basically. That way the city or the community can actually get increase the number of volunteers what they have to get their job done quicker at a fraction of the cost. And the information, FEMA has been using the Red Cross data since the beginning of their, since they were originally they've been looking at our street sheets, and they didn't know exactly where the Red Cross was. Ever since they were conceived by Jimmy Carter, they've been looking at our street sheets, so they know our level of damage. The only area that we really differ from FEMA is with the flooding. They're a little bit more lax on the flooding. But if you know the emergency manager, Garfield County, I think we may have a LOU already.
You probably do.
Yeah. I know that we are with all the larger counties and cities. And we can't deal with every little tiny city. But, Ardmore, we're working on those. So it's here from Ardmore. Any other questions?
What's your relationship with emergency management and the other local first responders as far as, do you convey this to them in some form?
Yes. We will provide them with, in some communities, the emergency manager does not have any people at all to be able to do that. He's the only person that does that. And if he's not mowing the lawns at that time, because they seem to have all these, they wear multiple hats. So we'll just provide them our street sheets, so they'll have a record of all the damage without even having to send anybody out, just because they don't have anybody to do it. So we do that all the time. But the American Red Cross is the only entity that actually has data on an event that occurs through multi-jurisdictions that has data for all the counties combined. I mean, each community will have data on their own city or their county, but there is not one single database that has all this information in one spot. So one of the problems that we do have, I was going to be talked about this, is when we collect all this information, we enter it all into a computer, we can dump it out to a spreadsheet. We have all their addresses. But we want to be able to upload this into WebEOC. It's used statewide, and we're working with the state on this, but they said, we need you to geocode this information first. I can pull and do some low-level processing on a KML file and strip off all of the bogus information, but that's a lot of work. I've tried the batch geocoders that you find online. It seems like they go through about 4 records and they throw up, because we're looking at doing 1,500 records or 1,000 records. And so we need to be able to take our record of our Excel file that has our all the information on the damage, this example of the data, we have the address, we have the county, the damage classification was major in this case, single family dwelling, occupancy type is unknown, water depth, all this stuff. So we have all this information in a spreadsheet, but I can't pull this information without actually stripping the data off of the KML file and keeping the geocoded, the long information appended to the file. So I need to be able to take a straight Excel file and geocode it appending the lat long. Once we append the lat long on each record, then we can pull this into WebEOC and have this information in a large database available throughout the state of Oklahoma. So that's a project I'm working on. I need some assistance. So if anybody has any ideas that can help me get through this, any GIS experts, it'd be much appreciated for the Red Cross and for your state of Oklahoma.
Have you ever heard of the OK GIS listserv? Because I was thinking, if you toss those KML files out to the listserv, you're going to catch pretty much the state of Oklahoma with all the GIS out there.
No.
Screen visit.
That's what I'm here to find out. What it is. Anybody else have more questions?
Okay, well, Steve, thank you very much.
Oh, if anybody needs information on how on the software on how to use this get this Woods 2 product, I've got some cards here. You just come give me an email and I'll send it to you. They'll teach you exactly how to use this thing step by step from getting to installing it to.
Geospatial framework is looking at the hydrography layers and actually come up with a work group to look at these layers that are available. You know, I'm working closely with the NHD right now, and then we have our various other state layers. But to get a group committee together and try to look at coming up with some standards and recommendations for kind of a official state layer for layers for hydrography. So I'm just looking for some input on that, seeing what other people think.
I think it's a good idea. You know, hydrography is one of our key framework themes that we have in the state. And, you know, right now we just have one data steward for any kind of hydrography, and that's the NHD, which Water Resources Board. Need to be looking at establishing data stewards for other key data layers in the state and identifying layers that we can actually say are official statewide data layers, and they're being maintained by this data steward and so forth. So, you know, I think that's just another progression we need to look at as far as building our whole statewide infrastructure on geographic information. So appreciate you taking some leadership on it, Mike, to do that. There's plenty of other work out there on other framework layers like transportation. Elevation's coming along. You know, we're gathering quite a bit of LIDAR data for the state now through the efforts that NRCS has been doing. And we'll hear a little bit more next month from Darrell from USGS on the National Elevation Study that was done. What's being proposed by USGS to actually get LIDAR for the whole nation there as well. So, and then, of course, we got our imagery, and Troy's going to talk to us next month, too, about what's come along on NAEP. So we've got a lot of framework data out there that we need to be focusing on. And I think we'll certainly start here with hydrography.
And we are going to have, I think on June 20th, there's going to be a Oklahoma SCOG meeting in Norman at the Weather Center. And after that meeting, I think 1:00, 1:30, we're going to have an NHD work group meeting. And that's part of a pilot project we've been working on with the USGS. But what we may want to do is just combine, you know, the council's hydrography work group with that, just make it one so we don't have.
Yeah, I think that's good. We focus on one theme, you know, and get everybody kind of working together on identifying what layers you want to pull out and have for official state layers.
And I think, you know, the NHD is a great place to, a great data layer to look at, because being that it's a, you know, national data set, and it's got, you know, it's based on the 124,000 topo maps, and it does need some update to it, but they've come out with a new set, tool set that makes editing a whole lot easier. And it's something that, you know, we as a group can work on. It's not just something that, you know, the water board, you know, would have total control over. It's something that, you know, if you're working on a project in a certain watershed and you need to update the flow lines or the streams or water bodies or whatever, you know, that's something that we can work together and you can actually do some of that.
Right.
So that really would help on statewide effort.
Right.
And I think, you know, the work group, we can come up with standards as far as to what detail do we want to update the map, you know, what size water bodies are we going to put in there, that sort of thing. And I really want to get where it benefits, you know, the agencies primarily, but you can make it that anybody can use it, public, private, whatever, but something that's going to be like meet everybody's needs, but possible baggage. I think working together with the other info can develop it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be important to have a whole spectrum of folks, not just state agency people, but, you know, out in the private sector as well as, you know, local and regional government folks participating in this, tribal folks. And then once we have some recommendations, we can stick it out on the listserv and get everybody's input on it and kind of work in that way.
And that's, yeah, I've been talking with the tribes too, and I think it's something where, you know, at the state, federal, tribal levels, when we're talking about a water body, what its spatial extent is, and what its, you know, reference ID is, we're all talking about, you know, the same thing. Instead of us all maintaining our own language. So I think this is a good project.
Okay. Anybody have anything you'd like to comment or add to that? Okay, sounds good. Anything else? If not, does anybody have any new business we need to consider? Hearing none there, how about some announcements on any upcoming training or conferences or whatever? I would like to recognize the Choctaw Nation for their award that they got, the mapping award they got up at the Magic, right, Shelley?
Chickasaw.
Ellis. Chickasaw, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was John Ellis. Yeah, not only did they won the map gallery at Magic, they also won the map gallery at the SCAW conference. So they sweeped the regional conferences with their maps, so it was pretty impressive to be able to do it in both conferences. So.
Sorry, John.
For all civilized tribes.
Yeah.
SCOG has some training coming up, this next week. The class is full, ArcGIS Basics 1, and we actually filled up that class really quickly. That's the 8th and 9th. We've also got ArcGIS Basics 2 class coming up June 13th and 14th. Got one seat open, am I thinking right? Got one seat open, so if you want that seat, you might want to catch it probably before you go to lunch. And then June the 20th, before lecture group was mentioned in a meeting, we've got a meeting at the National Weather Center. It's kind of our summer SCOG meeting. We've already got some presenters lined out. We're still working with Ezra exactly on the details of the technical presentation, but it's probably looking at maybe something about GIS 10, some of the new tips and tricks in that, or some of the functionality there. We've also got Call Oki lined up, and then the US DOT for some different applications for GIS. So go ahead and go online and sign up for that. We've also got registration turned on for the fall conference, September 24th to 27th. So we've got a lot of training coming up there as well as some workshops. So go to the website. That's the best thing to do is go look at the events list and see which one comes to. So SCOG.org.
Okay.
Do
just wanted to relay to everyone that I got word today from Jay Adams that Tim Callahan passed away. Tim was with the Oklahoma Department of Transportation for many years. Really kind of I consider him the father of their GIS, their ODOT, and certainly are sad to hear of his passing. So in case you hadn't heard, we just wanted to let you know that that's it. Next council meeting, I'm showing June the 1st being the first Friday in June. We'll meet then. It's okay.
Yeah, you were calling.
Okay. We'll have a little. This guy.
Over there, get tuned into their InSpot. Yes, we're okay. All right. Well, if there's nothing else for the good of the day, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
Come on.
Second. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. We're all adjourned. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Jake's gone?
I can't figure anybody. I know the name. I can't.
Yeah, I don't know.